Pazzo's podcast, episode number 14, bonus episode. We are out here at the Seton Country Fair enjoying ourselves. Kevin, Jason, how are you guys doing?
Doing great. Excellent. Josh, how you doing?
Excellent.
Hey, I like the song, Josh, the song choice on that one. Will you slow dance with me?
I will. Yeah. The song's name is actually Keep 'Em Coming, so
right.
It's pretty accurate, you know?
I like it.
I always like to ask second episode into us recording how you guys are doing, because we have kept them coming.
I think the second episode of every little group that we record, Keep It Coming, is an excellent song choice name for that.
I'll take it.
And it's always a lot more fun that second episode in.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we are starting to enjoy ourselves even more.
That's because said it before. It's because we're three beers in.
The beer seems to help. Surprise, surprise.
It does. Guys, we are here at the Seton Country Fair. We're enjoying ourselves. We've got several beers. Local beers, it seems like, are what we're kind of latching onto for this outing.
Yeah, we got a Cougar Bait, Country Boy, Cliff Jumper. We've got a Kentucky Ale, the Vanilla Barrel Cream Ale, and the Bourbon Barrel Ale, as all of our local beers being represented here at the Seton County Fair.
And I'm tearing up this Cliff Jumper, I'll tell you what. They revamped this recipe slightly, about four months ago or something like that. Cleaned it up a lot. Now it's drier, crisper, cleaner. The hops stand out more. It's if you've not tried the Cliff Jumper in a while, it's time to give that one a revisit.
It's actually one of my favorite IPAs locally that there are, and I heard rumors a while back of them canning it, but I have never seen it in cans, so I'm still keeping my fingers crossed for that to happen. But you actually, I believe, did you have that vanilla?
I did.
How was that?
It was excellent. We did that a couple weeks ago as a pint night ale during craft beer week, actually. And
it's a nice beer. If you like the vanilla cream flavor and like soda pops, get this beer if you're over 21. Not over 21, talk to someone. It's really neat. I don't know how. They do something really, really magical with that beer. Let me tell you what they do. They make the vanilla cream ale taste more like vanilla than vanilla does. And I don't know how they do that. How do you make something taste more like something than something is?
So I got to ask you a question, Kevin. On the label of that, the cream ale, it's got a stalk of corn.
Mm-hmm.
And the vanilla beans. So cream ales, are they traditionally done with more corn?
That's right. Whenever settlers started coming over in the 1800s, they were trying to make German-style lagers, but they kind of quickly realized they can't afford to bring those ingredients with them. It would outprice their consumer here in America. So what they did is they started scrapping for grains that grew very readily here in America to make beer with. They kind of realized real quickly, well, corn does really, really well. Same reason why the bourbon industry says, okay, you got to make bourbon out of corn, because this is the land of corn. Beer did the same thing back then. So what they decided to do is make a beer out of corn, somewhere between half corn and half barley. And what that would do is, if you notice, corn has a lot of sugar in it. So you get a lot of fermentables for very little bushels. So actually, when you add the yeast, it has a lot of sugar to eat and create the alcohol you want. And the thing about it is with that collection of ingredients in corn, the beer turns out to be, you know, kind of an alcoholic beer, kind of a sweeter beer, because some of that residual sweetness left over. And some of that residual sweetness leads to residual body. And that body turns out to be creamy.
So that's why it pairs so nicely with the vanilla.
That's right. Yeah. Cream ale. So you get those two things that bounce off each other. That's just marriage made in harmony. And they pull it off exceptionally well with the beer.
Really, really good beer.
We've talked about this before. The cream ale is essentially the American beer because of that. You know?
Absolutely. And what's now known as a California Common or the old steam beer, and we can get in that conversation another day.
And it's kind of in vogue now. You're seeing more and more of them, Braxton and you know, a lot more of these cream ales.
Because this is kind of the area where that happens. And so early settlers, you know, when they went to New York, when they went to Philadelphia, Jamestown, even to Florida, North Carolina, there wasn't a whole lot of corn there. They had to come somewhat into the Midwest to find that corn. So this Ohio Valley would be the first area where they got to where that grain was plentiful. So this is kind of the area where those beers were really made famous. And Cincinnati was kind of a big hub for that flavor.
Very, very cool.
Well, you know, we talk about the cream ales and stuff. We mentioned Braxton. You can find those at Pazzo's. Those are really great beers. Actually, a few weeks ago, we had the pint night there where Braxton's Cream Ale was featured, and it was fantastic, along with the Hefeweizen, which, by the way, guys, I've been studying up on my pronunciation on that. Did it do all right?
Very good. Straight out of Bavaria. Yeah. No one's going to fool you anymore.
Exactly. Do you remember when I was a newborn, I came here, and you guys took me under your wing, and you were like, no, that's wrong. You smacked me on the nose. I mean,
that's right, Josh. It's good Hoffenweizen beer. There you go. Yeah, yeah. All right, ready to bring credibility to the podcast.
I've said this before. I just throw the ball out there and let you guys hit it out of the park. You guys are taking me under your wing and teaching me what you know.
You put them right there on the tee for us. It's a home run every time, so I appreciate you doing that. So take one for the team.
One thing when you're at these county fairs, one of my favorite things is the food.
Yes.
I'm a glutton for fair food. My favorite thing is probably the sausages with the peppers and onions and everything like that. That's probably my favorite. But you always see these crazy fried items, fried Oreos, fried Twinkies, you know,
and
fried
that's where you'll find me.
Fried Coca-Cola.
Same. What?
Yes.
Fried Coca-Cola.
Yes. Yes. Fried Coca-Cola.
Oh, man.
So
nobody ever told me about
what
that.
What are your favorite beers to go with fried food?
You can't go wrong, which is an everyday American classic pale ale. We talked about that a little bit in the basket, but because it's got the hops, it's moderate across the board. Anything that has fried has a breadiness on the outside of it. It's battered in something, that breadiness really comes through, bounces off that malt characteristic exceptionally well because that malt has sweetness, it has caramel, that malt has a little bit of body, has that little bit of creaminess to it, and it's just got a lot of complex breadiness kind of goes off to it, and it makes the pairing a very, very harmonious marriage with one another. The beer has hops, has a little bit of spice, usually a spice that those rich foods kind of need that kind of bounce off each other really well. So if that food's getting a little rich, then the spice of the hops is really going to take the edge off that a little bit. And you got the alcohol and the carbonation. Those two things work in tandem to scrub that fat off the palate, off the tongue, so it makes sure that every bite of that fried food tastes just as plentiful and as rich and just as good and gooey as the first.
Yeah, I think lagers do really well, too, that high carbonation, just crisp sort of flavor that you get from those. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that you always see the macro domestic lagers, but also, you know, you get the more local lagers too and stuff like that. But I think that crisp, I think anything that's heavy on fat, anything that is heavy on, you know, is going to make you feel like you ate a funnel cake.
That's right. You know, if you just ate a funnel cake.
You know, you need to have something that's going to have a little crispness to kind of break through all that.
Absolutely. Those lagers, too, they have a little bit of a sulfur characteristic from the yeast. I feel like that sulfur adds a scrubbing quality on the palate that really does help to erase those fats, too. So that works in your favor as well. Those lagers, we're not really talking about the domestics, but we're talking about the really proper made ones, whether it be a Czech-style lager or a traditional northern German lager. They are properly hopped. They do have a hop spice to it. And so those things really, really do help you a little bit more with those foods than, say, your typical domestic, which is basically grain-flavored soda water. And so nothing necessarily against that whenever it comes to refreshment, quench the thirst, but whenever it comes to pairing.
Beer, second episode, guys.
Beer and food pairing. Giddy up. Hiccup. You really need to get you something with a little bit more characteristic, get you a properly made lager or a pale ale of some sort.
And interestingly enough, those beers are really great to do beer batters with. If you're doing fried food at home and you're wanting to do a fish and chips or some type of beer batter on a vegetable or something like that, those beers actually pair really well. If it pairs well to drink with fried food, it's going to make a good beer batter for frying food in.
Exactly.
Also, things I like to use, stouts actually can give you a nice flavor in when you're beer battering food.
Mm-hmm.
And I do stay away. Me and Kevin have talked about this in very, very deep discussions in the past. I do not like to cook with IPAs. I don't like to cook with any really, truly hoppy beer. When hops are magical when you are using them in cold preparations. If you want to use, if you go to a liquor barn or someplace where you can get, you know, hops, dried hops, you can make delicious salad dressings out of those. You can make all kinds of great sauces and things like that if they're cold. But hops, when you apply heat, add bitterness. And if you're steaming mussels, or like we do steam mussels at Village Idiot with a different ale all the time. I stay away from anything that has a real hop characteristic to it, because when you apply the heat, it just gets overly bitter and you lose any of that bouquet, the real nuance of the hop that you would have before you applied heat. So I try to go with malty bill. Scotch ales work really well. Mm-hmm. I don't like porters necessarily, but white ales or Hefeweizens or things like that, those are the beers that I really, really like to cook with.
Porter mm-hmm. is another one that those flavors would come across a little bit too strong.
Yeah, just a little too bitter.
Yeah, that's it. Most porters anymore are an American Robust Porter that's hopped pretty liberally. Even though you don't smell or taste the hops, they put them in the bitter end. So what that means, you've ridden off all those perfume and all those citrus aromas and flavors. You just retain the bitterness. And when you taste the beer, it's easy to say, well, all the bitterness is just either coffee-derived, it comes from some sort of coffee kind of bitterness from the grain, or some sort of cocoa-derived bitterness, maybe from the grain. You don't attest that it comes from hops, but it does. And so whenever you cook with food, if you're applying heat, one of the great things that I love about cooking with beer is that you intensify those malt flavors. You make the food sweeter. But the problem is if you're boiling down, if you're reducing that beer to make it sweeter, you're also reducing those hops, and that bitterness doesn't go away. It just gets more intensified too. That bitterness can throw off the balance of an entree really, really quickly. So I won't say you can't use it in warm prep. You just got to be really, really careful. It comes with a lot of trial and error. One of the things I like to do is use like an Italian vinaigrette, put it in a squirt bottle, and about half and half with an IPA. If you go to the grill, like for instance, you're doing chicken out there, every few minutes just give it a squirt. A little bit of a squirt, a little bit of film on there. It helps keep that chicken juicy. It applies a little bit of sugar to the outside of that. But you're not applying so much hops, or it's going to throw the bitterness off too much. Plus, those things work. The hops work with the herbs in that very little ratio. So it actually complements the herbs. So if you're going to cook with IPA, you do so very sparingly. And getting back to what Jason was saying earlier about the batter and the beer, I like to do a lot of beer cheeses, and I like to experiment with craft beer and better cheeses. So I look for beer and cheese combinations that work real well. Something like an Imperial IPA and like a Gorgonzola. Use those things with the same, cheddar, cream cheese base, whatever you want to do. Use those two ingredients and very sparing qualities inside that cheese, and it really adds a new dynamic, a new layer to that. Another one I like to use, I'll use a porter, but I'll use an English porter that's light on the hops.
Baltic porters are actually pretty good, too.
They take a backseat on the hops. Then I'll apply that with something like a smoked Gouda and blend those things together inside that same cream beer cheese base. And so you can play around with those kind of flavors, but you're right. If the beer and food works together in pairing, they probably work pretty good together in cooking, too, with the exception of those hoppies. Jason's absolutely right. He hit it on the head.
Another thing, if you are going to use one of those bitter beers like a porter or something like that, you can counteract it only in the aspect of cooking when you're doing things like baking. Like some porters are actually good if you're going to do like a brownie that you're going to add a porter to. The bitterness can kind of help with things that are already going to pair well with bitter, like chocolate. You know what I mean? So if you want to do a porter with brownies, it's going to work fine. Stout would, I think, work even better, or a Scotch ale, I think, would work great. But it wouldn't cross it out for that.
Right. Makes me think I need to go get an IPA and try some Brussels sprouts, because you get a green like that that's already kind of bitter. Maybe if you use that IPA in a sparingly way there, too, then maybe it can come across in a pleasant way as well.
And you can do some of those hot preparations. If you do, like, a nice dressing with a hoppy beer, you can do a last minute prep. So if I'm sauteing Brussels sprouts like you were talking about, you can saute the Brussels sprouts and then at the very end toss them with the vinaigrette, and you get a little bit of that without bringing out really all the extra bitterness from cooking it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, here's one of the pitfalls that comes with beer and cooking too. If you're at home trying to prepare a meal, it's easy to really say, well, it looks like I've got enough beer with like half of a bottle. Let's just pour the whole bottle. No. Pour the other half in a glass. Enjoy it while you cook.
Exactly.
The entire bottle does not need to go
just
into
like
that food prep. Exactly. So it's easy to get carried away with that. Beer is such an overpowering flavor. You don't realize how dominant beer flavors are. They can easily overwhelm a dish if you're not careful.
Especially when you cook, because it's basically reducing it.
Yep.
And you're gonna intensify a lot of the flavors that you get from that. And if it's an oatmeal stout, and you're doing something like, baking with it, then that's one thing. But if you're doing you know, a sauce and you throw in a bunch of IPA, then what bitterness is in that IPA is just going to be, you know, expounded on. It's going to get more and more bitter.
I know this morning I put together a soup, and it was basically a sweet potato red curry, pretty on the spicy side. I had no broth, but I had a Pilsner, so I threw a Pilsner in there. And we're talking about portions probably feed about 10 to 12. I used just one bottle. That's all it took. That's all you had to really kind of break down and help to liquefy that soup. And so it really doesn't take much, guys.
If you are doing, like, mussels, like we were talking about, the Elstein mussels, if you are trying to counteract that that bitterness, a little bit of cream or a little bit of butter, or sometimes a pinch of brown sugar. Even I always say this when I'm cooking, you know, even if you don't want a flavor in there, just a pinch of something is not going to make it taste like that. It's just to balance it. You know, if I'm making something that needs just a little brightness, you know, a little squeeze of lemon, it's not going to make it taste like lemon necessarily, but it is going to bring a little bit of brightness to the dish. Like if I'm making beans, I always add just a little bit of vinegar just to make it to where it's not so overly earthy, you know, heavy. It just kind of lightens it and balances it.
Nice.
So, guys, we asked a question in the last episode. Since these are bonus episodes, I want to continue that, and I want to ask another question.
What you got, Josh?
I want to ask what your favorite local beers are.
All right. A lot of varieties on that one coming.
I'd like to know, like, the one-offs and, like, the real, like, the Baba Yagas. You know, everybody drinks the Cliff Jumpers and the Cougar Baits and the Kentucky Ales and Bourbon Barrel, but I want to know about those ones that maybe I haven't heard about.
Yeah, let's do that.
Be great to get some knowledge on that so we could go and try them out ourselves.
Really, yeah, what we're doing is we're mooching for information. So you guys go out and tell us. You be our guy. Tell us what we should be hitting next.
Exactly.
All right, guys, it has been another episode of Pazzo's Podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Next week, we will be back at Pazzo's enjoying another pint night as we always do. And, you know, we can't wait to get back there, although we are very thankful for the Seton Country Fair for having us over.
This has been a blast. I appreciate them having us.
Come out and see us at Pazzo's. You know, you can sit around and talk beer with us and listen to the podcast. And
drink more beer with us.
You're more than welcome to stop on out.
And I have this now, which is a wireless mic. So if they want to ask us questions.
On air.
They can do it. They can do it. Thank you so much for listening. It has been Pazzo's Podcast.